call the Library Joint Powers Authority Board of Monday, June 6, 2011 to order. Kira, can you call the roll?
Supervisor Leopold?
Here.
Councilmember Stone? I'm sorry, Councilmember Story?
Here.
Councilmember Bryant?
Here.
Councilmember Byers?
Here.
Councilmember Reed?
Here.
Citizen Morrison?
Here.
Citizen Whittinger?
Here.
Citizen Gert?
Here.
And Supervisor Peary?
Here.
And I'd just like to welcome John Leopold and Hillary Bryant here, who are sitting in for Mark Stone and David Tarazas, respectively. So welcome.
Encore presentation.
Yes.
There you go.
All right, we have an agenda in front of us.
Barbara, I should just say, if everybody knows, I'm here representing Supervisor Mark Stone because he is doing the California AIDS ride, riding from San Francisco to Los Angeles over the next week with his daughter. So he couldn't be here tonight and ask me to fill in.
Yeah, we'll take that excuse.
Councilmember Tarazas is back east, and I apologize, I have an awful cold, so you won't be hearing from me much, so that's nice, great.
All right, we have an agenda.
I move approval of the agenda.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes unanimously. We have minutes of May 2nd, 2011. Any questions or corrections?
Move approval for me.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Oral communications. This is the time for members of the public to make brief comments on items related to the library, which are not on our agenda. So do we have any? Yes, come forward and what's your name? That's fine.
Okay. My name is Liz Pollard. And I'm an employee of the library, and I created the show, the exhibit that is currently downstairs and upstairs here, called All Alma Tanabe Street Broadside Collection. It's a response by printers and fine press and poets to the bombing in Baghdad in 2007. And the reason why I was interested in the exhibit is because it's on a street in Baghdad that's famous for booksellers, printers, poets. And also that there was a tremendous response in broadsides done by Santa Cruz printers and poets. I'm passing you around a little announcement as well as a list of the people who were killed in the bombing. The broadsides are interesting. There's about 140 now. They've been exhibited in the National Gallery in Washington, D.C., a Jaffe Gallery in Florida, NYPL. It's been discussed on NPR. We're the only library in the Central Coast to showcase the exhibit. And it'll be up until the end of June. I'm also interested in the exhibit and wanting to showcase it for the citizens of Santa Cruz because there's all these connections with the paper. The paper, all the type is hand paste. The ink is handmade. Paper is made from pulp. Much of it is made from the uniforms of the soldiers and the people that were killed. It's shown in the United Kingdom, Spain, Italy, Germany, throughout the United States. So one of the broadsides, and it's downstairs, is by Gary Young, and he is the poet laureate of Santa Cruz County. And he asked me to present this to the library, to the board, so that you can have it and frame it how you like. Again, the exhibit will be up until the 30th of this month, and I welcome any comments and remarks. And if you have any questions, please let me know. My email is paulkl@sancruzpl.org.
Thank you so much. Any other?
Yeah, hi. I'm Sue Graziano. I work in the Youth Services Department. And I just wanted to have a chance to kind of toot our horn here. Heather Northwest, who's a Youth Services Librarian at Live Oak Library, received the Barbara Brickmont Award from the Santa Cruz County Reading Association this year for her work with families in Live Oak. And Linda White, who just recently retired from the Youth Services Department, also received a Community Award from the Santa Cruz Reading Association. Talk about stellar volunteer. She volunteers at Central. She volunteers at Branch of 40 in Fairfield Park, doing three story times a week, of course. And then also I wanted to mention that in May we received the Queer Ally Youth Award for our work as a liaison and advocacy for queer youth at all of our libraries. And I thought that that was quite an honor, quite an honor.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Any other?
Good evening, board members. My name is Ed Silvera, and I have a question. We're in the packet, but I understand that we're not open for discussion. I just wanted to clarify that.
There's a letter, I believe, from you included in written correspondence, but there's no agenda item or discussion of the topic. So given that, it's appropriate for you to talk in open communications if that was the question. But a brief 3 minutes or less.
Can I request that this be put an open discussion marker for the next agenda, for the next meeting?
I'll take that note down and we will consider that.
Okay. Well, then I'll go ahead and go with my discussion. I assume everybody read the information, and we've been a part of the Branch 40 Library since 07, and we campaigned heavily pertaining to a project up on Water Street and North Branch 40, known as the Perez Adobe, and we campaigned heavily and. Maybe some of you remember regarding claiming those artifacts to keep them here in the community. And we campaigned to have the artifacts donated to the Branch 40 Library. And when the library was apparently going down, they said, Ed, we need you to protect the artifacts, so please take the artifacts. And we had some issues regarding, well, the artifacts weren't exactly locked up or anything. We had a concern. We went ahead and took them anyhow. Regarding some of the things missing, we took them anyhow, so they didn't go into we were warned that they were going to go to the police department, lost and found. So we didn't want that. So the issue is that we kept our case that we provided and kept artifacts in the case from the present Adobe digs. And recently, it's been brought to our attention that there's going to be a teen center that will be needed in the area where our case is so big. And we said, okay, if it can be put somewhere else in the library, so it's a library, so it's not a real big case. And we suggested that perhaps we can run it by the board, get the board's opinion, and perhaps we feel that it would be okay. Keep our historic case and artifacts, that a library was changed its name from the East Side to Branch 40 Library to honor our rich history of our neighborhood. Sort of makes sense, it was two and two. But under our request to hold back from taking the artifacts out, went ahead and the library decided to go ahead and just send the artifacts off to the police department, and they are now in the lost and found. Our point is that Brands of 40 is one of the first three settlements in California. Brands of 40 Road is the first surveyed road in California. The first election in 1802 was in Brands of 40. These are significant things for our community. Most towns would embrace this kind of information or our history. And here we're sort of having to have a discussion around keeping a glass cave with some of our artifacts for the community and people from outside, tourists, to want to know more about our Brands of 40 history. So we're requesting that you support, if Barbara's in favor or whatever, of getting back to us in an email, letting us know which ones are you in support of us continue on to support having our history in our local Brands of 40 library. In the meantime, we are hoping that Barbara will decide on letting us have you discuss this in the next meeting. Thank you very much for your
time. Thank you, Mr. Silver. Any other public input? Yes? Was that a yes for oral communication?
No, I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. All right. Good thing we're not in an auction. All right. Written communications, which for Hillary and John are at the end of the package, even though we will address them now if there are any comments. Any questions?
I wanted to just highlight a couple of things. There's the article on page 75 about Santa Clara County charging $80 non-resident fee. This could affect some of our patrons, particularly those who live up in Boulder Creek or in the Saratoga Library, or folks that go over the hill, use Campbell or any of the Santa Clara County. It does not include San Jose Libraries, Palo Alto, Mountain View. I think I got all the ones in Santa Clara County that aren't part of the county system. At this point, the other libraries in the Silicon Valley Consortium, they're all going to continue universal borrowing, and I don't see a recommendation from us to be doing anything differently, but it's something for us to watch. It's based on the fact that the state cut the funding for the public. Well, they haven't yet, because they haven't passed a budget yet, so we don't really know what they're doing. It was anticipation of the public library funding, transaction-based reimbursement going away. We're a net borrower, so we don't get anything from that anyway.
Okay.
Teresa, that point, didn't the legislature recently pass something that said services that are provided, you can't charge differently depending on where a person resides for the same service?
There's been a library law about CLSAs, which are consortiums within the, if you're a member of a CLSA, which we are, which is Pacific Library Partnership, then we cannot charge for a library card. So you can get a library card anywhere in California by showing your Santa Cruz card. You can't now in Santa Clara County because they're not part of the CLSA. And there's a couple of other outliers. I believe San Leandro is not part of it. And I think there's a couple of others in the state. So I don't know if that, you might be able to speak to that one. But in terms of libraries, we have an agreement that we will, if you're a member of a CLSA, meaning you get state funding, you can't charge. Jen?
Also, the voters approved Prop 625 last November. And if I understand it, it basically restricted and constrained fees, and it said that if you do discriminate against one class of user, that converts it into a tax, as I read it. I've been through enough seminars on this subject that it's my understanding that if you discriminate and you charge a fee to anyone outside of your area, that becomes a tax subject to the voters, and therefore can't do that. I'm not sure. San Clara County, they have some good advisors, so maybe they reach a different conclusion. But for me, the
decision on that was that they're not charging residents. I think if I read it correctly, they're not charging residents, therefore they can charge.
Well, for instance, the city of Santa Cruz was considering charging an emergency response fee to anybody who came into our city and we needed needed emergency services. Idea was just to get quite from insurance companies, not necessarily to go after every single penny for every person. But we abandoned that idea so far because, with our understanding, we couldn't do that. We couldn't charge just out of area residents. We had to charge everybody the same from a sense of equity.
They got by that one somehow. Cause I remember reading it. I'd have to look at the articles again. And just a couple of highlights in the monthly report. You have a brochure in front of you from the county. Well, not me. We produced it. We are doing a partnership with the County Office of Education. They provided funding for us this summer to provide a program for parents for supporting early literacy. And then they're looking at giving us additional money in the fall for a tutoring program. So this is, I haven't even seen the brochure, but I was in the office.
This is a sample of the brochure because it's at the printer. And
the County Office of Education approached us and said, we've got the money and you've got the expertise, let's put it together. And so that's kind of cool. This room was used for First Friday, the First Friday art tour this last Friday. The photographs around the wall were the exhibit, and I guess it was a decent turnout, and this is not an easiest location, and so we're pleased to have done that, and I guess we'll be looking at doing that again. So, Sue talked about the awards, so I don't need to do that. Mr. Silvera mentioned the Teen Center of Brand Supporting. We had some trust money that we've had for quite a while for Brand Supporting. We used it for self-check furniture and doing some other changes there, and there's enough left that we want to be able to create a special area for teens that we haven't been able to do before. So we're working on creating that space.
Can I just ask a question?
Yeah.
Are there artifacts that now are lost and found?
They've been taken to police property, yes.
Well, disturbing. If they're a real historical artifact.
There's a lot more story behind this, but we're not up for discussion this morning. So.
How did it get resolved?
We've been trying for a year and a half. The other kind of exciting news is that Janice and I were asked to come to the, you didn't hear about the tech raising event that was held in Santa Cruz Geeks hosted a tech raising, which was a weekend where you go in at Friday night at 6, pitch an idea, and a team forms if they want your idea, develop your idea, and at 6 o'clock on Sunday, the ideas are presented. They work on it all weekend. So Janice and I were asked to present an idea, and our IT staff gave us the basis for one, and we presented it, and we had a team of 4 developers and a graphic artist who loved our idea and worked with us all weekend on it, and they're continuing to develop it. And basically what it is, and I'm just going to do a real quick show and tell, this was just kind of a prototype. We took a number we did a tour for Pacific and Front Street, so like the St. George Hotel, and so that little QR code, I think I've talked about those before. If you click on the QR code, it takes you to information about the historical information about the St. George, and then also leads into the library's database of information, articles about the St. George. And there were about six locations on Pacific and Front. They've since developed another one along Westcliff Drive. We'd like to expand this to other areas of the county as well. So they're developing a way that we can do that. We're kind of working through a lot of things that have to happen, I guess, as you imagine. You can't just drop them out there. But it's really exciting. It's a way to get our information about our about the library that we have stored in the library out into the community. The Museum of Art and History wants to partner with us. This would be an excellent thing, actually, for the Via de Brand Sforti artifacts, to have a story on them, a place where you can get information about it. It would be much more appropriate for getting information about local history. And the great thing on this is it ties back to the library's information that we have on local history and local photographs. And we know that Capitola has a rich collection. The Museum of Art and History has a rich collection of information. Getting some of it's digitized, some of it's not, but this is an exciting project that we have volunteers helping us do, and so it's quite exciting. So we're moving forward with that. And last but not least, on some of the statistics, self-checkout. Everybody's up on self-check now, And I'm really excited that in April we hit an overall 72%, which I think is great, great progress. And the two, La Selva Beach and Live Oak, which have been going the longest, were at 83 and 84%. So it's going well. And that's what I wanted to point out there.
Thank you. Any other comments on written communications? All right, let's move on to reports of advisory bodies. We have someone here from the Friends.
Craig Menville, I'm one of the board members of the Friends of the Library. I was given this by our treasurer to report to you. For the last calendar year, there was I'm going to round this off to the thousands just to make it easier for everyone. About $92,000 in books and media from the Friends, and that's compared to $104,000 from the year previous. Adult and youth programs, about $18,000 from about $15,000 the year before. The branch and chapters, $121,000 to Scotts Valley, and that's not all necessarily from the Friends. The Friends stores some of that money as it's donated to the chapters and then gives it back into the system. Other branches were about $23,000, making it about $144,000 from the branches. And the self-checkout machines, as mentioned, about $52,000 from them. And so our total contribution was approximately $315,000 compared to about $158,000 for the last year. But again, $121,000 of that comes from the Scotts Valley and all the new things.
Thank you. That's really wonderful. Next item is the Finance Committee. Draft of the next annual report. Finance Committee met on May 23rd, and the two items that we came to some recommendations on, first we are going to talk about later in our meeting, which is the fund balance policy. So I'm not going to go into great detail on it since we can talk about it then, but the Finance Committee did unanimously approve that we recommend the fund balance policy to be brought forward to the full library board and supported it. And secondly, we did look at the draft budget. I think there's probably been a few changes since we looked at it, but we did look at the draft budget and also approved that, or recommended that the board approve the use of up to $100,000 from our current fiscal year fund balance to be used to compensate for any budget shortfalls in our next fiscal year 11-12. And once again, I know that information is in the budget package that Teresa will be walking us through, so I'm not going to go into detail because context is sort of important there. And other than that, we are not going to be holding a meeting at the end of June. Anything else there? Okay. The Finance Committee.
Oh.
The Finance Committee meets monthly, but not in June.
I will be on vacation. It can be.
member reports. Do you have anything for Scotts Valley?
I guess this will probably be our final update on the status of the construction. We're planning to have substantial completion of the terminal use of the library by the 15th and 16th of this month. The rains that came a few weeks ago exposed the fact that the contractor had some windows in that were not sealed and some skylights in that were not sealed, and we had all sorts of work to be done to rectify that. So that moved us back a little bit. And then the other thing is apparently some of the custom furniture, there's a very few pieces of custom furniture that haven't yet arrived. Like in the teen area, we're going to have, it's going to be set up like a diner. There's going to be booths like you see, just like a diner any place, and there's going to be little cubby holes for kids to put their backpacks in. I guess those might not come until the day before or the day of opening. And most concerning of all is the disco ball has not yet arrived. So, fingers crossed about that one. But those, these are things that might arrive the day of opening or a few days afterwards, and there's a punch list that we'll probably be going through, like there's a painting here, you got to fix, you know, little types of things that you have with any construction project that will be going on. Outside of that, though, we expect it to be complete by 15th or 16th in time for the opening on the 18th.
Thank you. Councilmember Story, a report from Capitola.
No update in Capitola. Our program design consultant is still doing their work, taking community input, and developing design of our new library. But no updates at this time.
Okay. Moving on to staff reports. First one is approval of Scotts Valley lease. Teresa, can you walk us through?
Well, basically, the background is that at the April meeting, this board asked to continue the item for another month in order to have more time to review it. Shortly before the May review, some issues arose between the county and the city of Scotts Valley, or and the RDA, based on the 1990 pass-through agreement. I'm not going to go into those because that's not really our purview. In late May, Scotts Valley approved the lease with a two-year term, and the county approved the lease with a two-year term contingent on the Library Joint Powers Board approving that lease tonight. So the lease, as far as I know, meets the terms of the pass-through agreement, and there was this concern expressed by members of this board that they didn't want me to just go ahead and sign it as was authorized in a motion from last month, but did want to discuss it, and with the feeling that the change from a 30-year lease to a two-year lease was the item that they want to discuss. So I've been asked what is the impact, potential impact of a two-year lease, and what I've said here is that my understanding is the overriding interest of the community is for the new Scotts Valley building to open on time, and this two-year lease accomplishes that, gets us open, and gives all the parties involved a chance to talk about whatever the issues are and come to an agreement. And I have been assured by the city attorney that the city of Scotts Valley is committed to a long-term presence in Scotts Valley and is ready to start discussions anytime we want. And I just have to, as a final note, it was interesting because I thought Capitola had a lease. I thought it was seven, but Capitola's expired. We only have two current leases on our facilities, and that's La Selva Beach and Felton, because those are rental, and Felton is month to month. La Selva's is for eternity.
Good.
30 years, 50 years, I don't know, it's really, really long. Worst case scenario, 2 years goes by and there's no lease, Scotts Valley would simply join the pack with the rest of the other libraries in the system, and we continue to operate. So that's all I've got.
Okay.
The worst case scenario is that there would be no lease at the end of 2 years,
right?
And we would continue to operate Scotts Valley the way we operate the other seven facilities that don't have leases, which is just operate them and deal with it.
Hope that's the worst case. Wouldn't we have to renegotiate the lease, though?
Well, during the next two years, we would be but if we could not come to terms on renegotiating the lease, if something prevented it, then we would simply be in the same situation that we're in with the other seven branches that we have that don't have leases. We don't have leases on any of our facilities.
Right, and that assumes that Scotts Valley is willing to allow us to.
Right, sure, yeah. Right. And I do have assurances from the city attorney of Scotts Valley that is their intention.
Nancy, do you have a question?
Well, I'm just confused. I think, Felton seems like it's kind of outside of the lease thing. I mean, it's not even owned by
any
entity.
We have a month-to-month lease.
We have a month-to-month lease. Mm-hmm. And so Live Oak, which is an RDA, doesn't have a lease. So why are we... I'm just trying to figure out why do we have a lease for Scotts Valley then?
Because and city attorney can probably, or any of the attorneys can probably answer this better than I can, but my understanding is that they tend to protect the landlord more than they protect the tenant.
Scotts Valley redevelopment.
Any landlord. any landlord, any lease situation, the landlord is the one that gets the most protection from a lease. So if the landlord wants a lease, you have a lease.
Yeah. Just to add to that real quickly, wearing my Scotts Valley City Council member hat, we want to use for that exact reason, to protect the redevelopment agency and protect the city. And so we developed this lease that's modeled on the, I think it's very similar to the one that was that exists between the city of Santa Cruz and people on the wharf, tenants on the wharf, I believe.
That's the original basis.
Yes, it's the standard triple net lease, and then we've made modifications to it, but I don't think there's anything too radical about it.
Is it the intention of Scotts Valley to have a lease after 2 years?
It is, yeah, absolutely.
And could you identify the issues that prevent us from having a lease
longer
term now?
Well, as is noted in the lease in section 1.07, the city and the county have different perspectives about some agreements that we've signed. This allows us to put those aside and focus on what I would assume we all want, which is to get that brand new library open as soon as possible. It gives us time to work that out while the library is open.
So this board won't be discussing the next lease? It'll be the county and Scotts Valley? Is that
correct? The lease would be, the lease is between the city. If the county makes the JPA their designee, then the lease is between the city and the JPA. If the county chooses to not make the JPA their designee, the lease is between the city and the county.
Hillary,
do
you have a question?
And in terms of what Jim was saying, in most real estate transactions, it automatically rolls into a month-to-month. Is that the case in this? I couldn't find any language around that, but it seems that real estate or residential...
It's not in any of the other agreements we have with... I mean, there were leases in Capitola. There have been in the past when I both, and none of them seem to refer to month to month, but I can't really speak to that because the attorneys
I think in most cases, by operation of law, it does continue to a month to month, but we have a background of other agreements and whatnot. But the default is that it would turn into a month.
It seems to me that there may be leases.
That's why we don't have them. I don't inherited all of this.
Did I see your hand up before
Catherine's here? I'm not sure if it was before Catherine's, but I'll defer to her. But I wanted to follow up on Supervisor Leopold's questions about the issues and whether we could get more specificity about what those issues are so we can have some sense of kind of where the assignee ultimately we're going to be negotiating.
No. Forgive me, I thought you were going to say something else. If the JPA is the designee, then the lease would be negotiated between the city and the JPA. The issues that the city has with the county and where we have different perspectives is over the type of service that is going to be provided by the county. We have three agreements that we've signed with the county. I'm speaking now as a Scotts Valley City Council member. A 1990 agreement setting up our redevelopment agency, a First Amendment from 1996, and a Second Amendment from 2009. The first two amendments are really the ones that deal with the nuts and bolts of this matter. The library JPA did not exist at that point. JPA came to existence, I think, after a vote of the people in November of 1996. So the agreements that the city has, where we followed through on our commitment to build a 12,500 square foot library and provide it to the county or its designee for $1 a year, those go back to the 90 and 96 agreements. From the city's perspective, there are service levels that we were led to expect in return for fulfilling our obligation. The county has a different perspective. And what this does is say, let's put that aside, give the parties time to come to an agreement on that, and let's focus on just making sure the library that we were about ready to open actually does open on time.
But if I can just follow, in response, I think, to what Sam asked, that would not come under the purview of the JPA to be negotiating with the city of Scotts Valley.
Well, on the lease,
even if we are designated,
the city of Scotts Valley, the library JPA has never promised anything to the city of Scotts Valley in writing or in any other way. We're not asking the library JPA to provide anything. We believe we have agreements with the county where the county has made obligations. The county has a different perspective, and so that is an issue between us and the county. And we're having this discussion now because the county wanted to make some changes to the lease that we originally proposed to talk about how they could become the designee if the JPA were to go away or if they were to pull out of the library system. So I don't know if that's helpful.
If the Joint Powers Board becomes a designee, then we would be negotiating the lease or the renewal at the end of 2 years. Okay? Now, I understand there's other surrounding issues, but by becoming the designee, it sounds like we get caught up in the middle of that, or do we also take on any of those responsibilities? Maybe that's a legal question about those issues that are currently between Scotts Valley and the county. If we get in the middle of it?
I think the JPA becomes the designee for the term of the lease.
Exactly.
At the end of the lease term, we're basically back in the same situation we were.
Yeah, so it's not a blanket grant that the county would be giving to the make the JPA their designee. It's a 2-year lease, as I understand it. The county would decide to grant that for 2 years.
Right, and
right.
That was already done.
Unanimously. Unanimously.
Scanlon, did you have a follow-up?
I've got two, but they're a little different. The first one is, we talked about all the other branches. Are there not leases because it fell apart? Were they negotiated with the other?
I have no idea.
You don't know?
I have no idea. I've just searched the files to see what's there. Well, Capitola had one and it just expired like 2 years ago or something. And I think no one noticed. I think is what happened. I mean, it's all before me. I'm not going to take responsibility for any of it.
I think they've just all been grandfathered into the system. It's a system. And I think the way we look at all of them is part of the system. Not as a separate entity. I mean, that's my understanding.
The second question had to do just with something you said about service. Mm-hmm. But if it defaults, the county cannot provide that service. Sometimes, is that right?
Our perspective is that the county made commitments to the city of Scotts Valley.
What are these commitments?
Levels of service. That there would, if you look at the.
So many books or so many hours?
Basically hours of service. Hours of service defined as the quality of service.
Okay.
And it was based on those promises that we went ahead and made an $8 million investment to build this library. So that's, I don't know if that.
Yeah, okay, get there.
Okay.
So what we're saying, though, it may fall apart if the county isn't willing to give that many hours or whatever the service levels are.
I don't think that's anything to do with falling apart. It's just this came up 2 weeks before our last meeting.
Okay.
And we originally brought the lease forward in our April meeting. Supervisor Stone asked that it be moved back for a month. We didn't hear why, we just heard it needed to be moved back. And then about 2 weeks before the May meeting, when we didn't have time really to make any changes, then all of a sudden we heard that the county had to be included as a they weren't comfortable necessarily with granting the JPA as their designee, and the county needed provisions on if they were to pull out of the system that they would become the designee and the recipient of the library for a dollar a year. So that was a change from our perspective that took place at the last minute and was contrary to what the county signed with their Second Amendment in 2009. So to us, that there was not a lot of time to react to that, and we had an opening that was scheduled. So our goal is to get the new library open and give us some time to work out any different perspectives we have in some of the different language that's in the earlier two agreements.
The problem that the county had with this was that the city of Scotts Valley said you have to commit, and the JPA has to commit to the Scotts Valley Library being open a set number of hours.
That's what I was asking
to figure out. And staffed in a certain way. And we didn't feel like either the county or the JPA was going to, we haven't done that with any branch. We haven't made that kind of a legal commitment in a lease. So that's why we ended up going back to, it sort of made that commitment, but made it in the form of committing to keep the Scotts Valley Library open, not less than the Live Oak or Aptos Library, which we're considering sort of comparable libraries. So we did that. We said did that really to get over that hump of, a set number of hours and a set level of staffing.
John?
Well, I want to express a debt of gratitude to one of my predecessors on the Board of Supervisors, Robbie Levy, who had the good thoughtfulness to include the library system in these redevelopment agreements when they started happening in the late 80s and 90s. It was her idea that if there was going to be losses to the county general fund, that there should be some public benefit, and got these library commitments to build libraries included as part of redevelopment agreements. And I believe the county has been completely committed to getting these libraries happening, and the agreements actually set a date by which they had to be built to ensure that those public benefits were created. And I remember 2 years ago, at the end of a 10-day budget session at the Board of Supervisors, where we had to cut $25 million, Councilmember Reed brought the city attorney to threaten the county about the redevelopment agreement, either get out of the obligation or to radically change it. And I think to the good credit of the county staff and our Board of Supervisors, we didn't agree to that. And we wanted to make sure that a library got built in Scotts Valley. And then that has proceeded apace. And we've always been committed to building a library in Scotts Valley, and I think that the board is very excited to have it finally open on June 18th. I don't think we've ever been a block to making that happen. We have never thrown the lawyers into it. The city of Scotts Valley has been very litigious on the issue of the redevelopment agreements. And it's very unfortunate, I find, for the public, because the public has a right to believe that there's going to be a library there for many years to come. And the public's done a great job of raising money to get this library to be built. And it will be populated, and it'll be a great library. Everything I've read about it, it just sounds like a fantastic library. So this step that we will take today, I think, is a good interim step. It's just deeply disappointing that these new issues that have been thrown in late in the game have clouded what is otherwise something that this board should be very proud and happy about, and we should all celebrate. And instead, we are just paying lots of lawyers to ensure that people follow through on the agreements that they signed decades ago. The board voted unanimously to give the power to approve this lease to the JPA, because we believe that the JPA is the controller of the library system. So I'd like to go forward and do it today, and I hope Mr. Reed and the rest of the Scotts Valley City Council realize that they should not enjoy any benefits and more than anybody else in the county in terms of staffing and the number of hours, because we don't pay for this system in a way that benefits one library over another. It benefits the entire library system. If there's anything the library board has reaffirmed in this past year, is we're a 10-grant library system, and we should be working to keep our libraries open as much as possible and run it on a good financial course. So let's hope we can get through this evening and move forward in a positive way and celebrate on June 18th to open the library.
Thank you. Jim and then Sam.
Just three corrections I want to make. First, the supervisor's point about the appearance that I made with the city attorney to the county board of supervisors a couple of years ago, and how the county had a good sense to not do what Scotts Valley was asking for, instead do something else. I think, John, you've got it 180 degrees backwards. You all did exactly what we wanted. We were asking for an agreement that just said that we could access the library funds that we've been saving up, gosh, since 1990, that we had been accruing for all those years. It was a condition of the purchase that the seller had to see a letter from the county that we would be able to access those funds at some point to be able to build this library. We weren't asking for the money. We weren't asking for a check. We were asking for a letter that said we would be able to access those funds. And we brought that issue forward to Ms. Moriello, and we asked that it be put on an agenda. It was delayed a month. And then it was moved to another issue, to a later meeting, where we didn't have time. If we didn't come to agreement at that meeting, our purchase agreement with the seller would have blown up. We had no time, and so we consulted an attorney. Even though we had told you folks you had to move on this quickly or our lease, our purchase agreement is going to blow up. And you all did what we wanted to, and I congratulated you then for doing so, and I congratulated you afterwards, and I'm very glad you did. That's what enabled the purchase to go through. So I'm glad we were able to agree on that. That's not a bone of disagreement as far as I can tell. Second thing, just a quick correction to what Ellen said. At the last meeting, I tried three or four times to be as clear as I could. The city is never and has never asked the JPA to make any financial commitment to us over and above what they're giving to any other branch. I three or four times specifically made the point that we have an issue with the county, not with the JPA. We don't have contracts with the JPA that have promised us things. We believe we have contracts with the county that have promised us things. So I made that as clear as I could at the last meeting, and I just wanted to make that as clear as we could now. And to Supervisor Leopold's point about things getting clouded with issues thrown into things late in the game, the thing that I'm disappointed about, and this happened despite what I want and what I believe the Scotts Valley City Council wants, is we now have in this lease, if I'm not mistaken, language that says, here's what's going to happen to this library if the JPA blows up, if somebody pulls out of the JPA. We didn't ask for this language to be included. We didn't, when we started negotiating with the city, we negotiated a standard triple net lease. It's the county, after they delayed consideration of this one time, then they came back and said, we've got to add a provision. Here's the exact wording. In the event the library JPA terminates at the end of the current term, 2017, where the county terminates its membership in the JPA, the parties agree that the county shall be substituted as a tenant in the library site and in the building lease. This is what we have had to insert into this lease in forms essentially the same as what we've got right here because of the county's assistance. That to me is very disappointing that we have members of the library JPA who are looking ahead to what might happen if the JPA goes away. That's the big disappointment, and sorry that we had to do this in order to open the library, but the city felt we didn't have any choice other than to agree to the county's terms in order to make sure that our library opened on time.
I wanted to ask, have the parties talked about how this issue is going to be resolved over the next 2 years? Because it appears that we're taking occupancy off the table. What are you guys going to have to negotiate with? I mean, it sounds like to me it's just either somebody capitulates or goes to court.
We're taking occupancy off the table?
Well, that's what I hear about the library.
Well, it's definitely not the city's choice to operate this library without a lease. We don't, and again, I'm speaking as a council member now, not as a library JPA board member. But there are protections that mostly accrue to a landlord with a lease that we feel, as a city council member, I feel it's responsible for us to ensure that we have a lease, just like virtually every other transaction that takes place in the public sector has a lease.
But my question was just, have you guys talked about how you're going to approach this and resolve it? Are you going to?
I don't think we have too much because the focus has been on let's just get this thing open for now. And maybe there have been discussions. I don't know. John or Ellen, you might be able to clarify or add some light. I don't have any awareness of that. We've just been focused on getting over this hurdle here tonight.
We tried to show up at a council meeting with an attorney without talking to any council members first. That they have chosen a different strategy.
Nancy's got a question, then we'll come back to you.
I've got a question for you, Jim. You have a contract with the county, right? But not with the JPA. So are you saying that, say, if the JPA doesn't provide the number of hours that you feel like you are entitled to, that you will then go to the county and demand that the county provide them? Is that sort of what, because I'm confused about that.
Our issues with the county.
Would that happen? I mean,
we have concerns. We think we were promised hours and service.
So you would then go to the county and say, you need to give us 10 more hours. You need to provide.
Not necessarily.
Okay, then I don't understand.
But well, no, I don't understand your question. I'm sorry. Was there a question?
Well, yeah, there was. It's like you said you had a contract with the county, and I presume it's about the hours that used to be associated with Tier 2. Is that right? They said that they would provide
right.
you those hours.
Right.
Okay. So if the JPA says that, you know, we'll have a new hard times, and we're not going to be able to do that, and we have to, you know, and you, so you're not going to get the hours that you wanted, what then? Will you go to the county and say, hey, you know, you promised? I'm trying to figure out, is this a separate issue for you then with the county? Because I don't understand that if we're...
Well, you understand we have a different perspective on the service levels that we think we're...
I'm just asking what would happen.
I don't know. I can't tell you what's going to happen. Your crystal ball is as good as mine. As I said, we haven't started, I'm not aware that we've started to talk about what's going to happen after we get this lease done. What happens next? We just want to get a lease agreed to so we can open this new library.
Catherine,
yeah,
and then Sam. The JPA does this budget and sets the hours and sets the levels of service, not the county.
That's right.
Do you see that changing?
No.
In fact, this board said, sorry, Scotts Valley, we have to take, you know, 50 hours off every week because of our budget.
No, I don't see that changing.
Mother.
Sam.
Okay.
Well, in section 1.07, it states that Scotts Valley branch will have the same number of hours as the Aptos and Live Oak branch. And so that's in this agreement. So that will bind the JPA, because this lease is between the Scotts Valley and the JPA. So to the extent that whatever we do with Aptos and Live Oak, then Scotts Valley would have to be equivalent. And that's built into this lease document. So that would be a requirement on us to handle them all like that. And it just makes me wonder then, how eventually Capitola would fit into that model, because it's not listed here, and obviously Capitola would have an interest in having an equivalent arrangement.
Capitola already has an equivalent arrangement in their RDA with the county. They're promised levels of service of the same as Aptos and Live Oak.
Yeah, but it doesn't speak to it in terms of hours of operation. It was kind of different semantics there. So, but what I'm, and yes, that's in the redevelopment agreement, but in this lease, that some of that concept is being transferred into this lease document. So to that extent, they are going to be linked, and we will have less flexibility.
For the next 2 years?
Well,
perhaps longer.
I'm just not seeing how this gets fixed in 2 years.
I understand that the city and the county obviously have differences in terms of this lease, but my interest is to see the board approve the lease so that the library can open. I personally am not in favor of having levels of service and that sort of thing within a lease, and I hope that at the end of 2 years the lease language can be rewritten to fit that out. But I move that we approve the lease as is, on the understanding that the city and the county come to terms and that this will allow us to open.
I think there's a public comment.
I'll second the motion.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second. Is there a public input on this that anyone would like to make?
Hi. I'm Elizabeth Walsh. I'm the president of Friends of the Library for Scotts Valley. And we just, you know, you're having this meeting less than a week ago, had a group that wanted to together, and I'm going to just read it quickly to you. As citizens of Scotts Valley and patrons of the Library District, we're excited about our new library, which we've been saving for over 20 years. We are sure the members of the Joint Powers Board share our interest in the new library opening on schedule June 18, 2011. We are confident that during the next 2 years, the main issues will be resolved and the longer-term lease can be negotiated. To this end, we urge the LJEB to approve the lease as presented and approved by the City of Scotts Valley. And had we had more time, we could have had a lot more signatures, and no rain, we would have had more. But there are 700 signatures here, from really ranging from all over the county, because this library will benefit the entire county. And it is going to be a model for libraries to come. We are so excited about it and hope that you'll do nothing to jeopardize the opening of this library and support it in every way that you can. And but also to be true to what the library deserves and what's been agreed to, for our library to have the hours that it needs to benefit the most most people that can. It's going to have specific, particular things that this library can do that no other library can do. We have been very supported by our community and surrounding communities. We've raised over $200,000, not by just a few donors, but by hundreds and even more than 1,000 donors have not just whined about it, open our library more, we're not going to hold signs. We just don't do that. We can't get people to come to meetings and talk loud, but we roll up our sleeves, we write checks, we do what we can. We have had hundreds of people donate in-kind gifts and cash and sponsor areas. We've gotten several grants. We're in the middle of getting another wonderful grant for special needs kids. This library needs to open on time, and I encourage your support of it. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Anyone else? Okay, so no one. We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes unanimously. I, for one, am really looking forward to going to that grand opening. And I know we all are. All right. Moving on to 8B, April financials.
April financials. Oh, yeah. We're doing good. Some of this got projected to the end of the year. The April financials bring us to 83% of the year. Our revenue is about 87%. More important, sales taxes at about 87%. Maintenance of effort, which is property taxes, right at 83%, which I think is pretty good because I thought we were going to lose some ground this year. We seem to be holding. So that's really good. On expenditures, some things are under-expended because we, janitorial, we have some special cleaning we haven't done yet and may not do. One of our maintenance guys is incredible. He pretty much every day gets inmates, to help with landscaping. So that's really stretched the landscaping budget, which we haven't had much of. So that's been really good. In the budget, I do talk about some carryovers, like the integrated library system. We are going to finish spending it out next year, so this year is very under-expended. And that's why, so when I project to the end of the year in terms of available money, I kind of didn't count that as, I counted it as a carryover. Our natural gas is high. I can only think that's because of this endless winter. We get a break today, sort of, kind of. Maybe in the spring today, I don't know. So, anyway, that's, personnel is doing really well. It's at 81% instead of 83%. And also factored into our year-end predictions. City Finance Department gives us an estimate on personnel about this time, and I did reflect that in the budget, and it's about a $50,000 savings this year that we're looking at in personnel. And last but not least, month-end cash balance is $1.2 million. Looks a little better than when you were on the board, huh, John?
Well, as someone who's revisiting these financials after not being here for a year, they're much more healthy. Financials. You look at the financials and the cash balance report. It's a much stronger, more financially sound organization. So good work for the board and the community and the staff for everything that's going on to help make that happen.
So, any questions?
Yeah. I think they're just questions to understand this accounting method on. Page 40.
Mm-hmm.
About 7 or 8 down, there's a 47,000.
Telecommunications. Okay.
It's telecommunications internal. I guess that was not budgeted but spent.
It was actually budgeted, but it was budgeted in we just budgeted all in telecommunication services outside, and it was actually money we owed the city. So the city said, no, you can't take it out of outside, you have to put it in inside. So we actually did budget for it, but not in the right line.
I got it. Okay. And then on the following page, about 7 or 8 up from the bottom, books and periodicals, grants and donations. And it shows 320% of the budgeted use, and I just couldn't understand what exactly that category is and what this all means. So the adjusted appropriation is $25,100. So I guess that would mean that the expectations we were going to spend $25,000 of grants and donations received on books and periodicals.
Right. It's kind of a placeholder every year for people that donate to the library for us to buy books and materials. We never know how much we're going to get. We kind of just budget $25,000, although I think the Finance Committee asked me to budget more next year, and I did.
Right.
We only spend it if we get it.
So under the year-to-date expenditures, it's $80,000. So can I assume that we received $80,000?
Yes, exactly.
And we're spending it.
Yes, exactly.
Is there a corresponding line in the revenue?
Yes.
Donations.
On page 39, donations library. You can see we've taken in $58,000.
Was that because we had some from last year?
I forgot to bring the printout with me. There's probably some grant. A grant probably went in there as well that might have been received as a grant elsewhere, and yet we expended it out of there. So,
okay. Thank you.
I usually have the detail in the one folder I forgot.
That's all I
need.
Catherine, any line in this budget, but all of a sudden this is the opportunity to ask it somewhere else. Are we benefiting yet by Cruzy IO being across the street and all the work they're doing for upending?
Major time, big time. One thing we're doing is we're actually moving all of our servers over to Cruz IO so that we don't have to maintain them, which means we don't pay the air conditioning on them. We'll have access to them, but it's going to be a much better arrangement for us. They are also, as you probably know, planning to bring fiber to the city, and it's going to come right through here. And so when they do that, we'll get the fiber. In the meantime, they are giving us a very, 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 very high-speed wireless connection on their building that they're going to let us use. And we're also looking at them to help us out in Scotts Valley because there's some. We've got about 5 different ways we're trying to connect to the internet out in Scotts Valley, and it's like it's a race to the finish. We'll get there first. And Cruz IO and Wireless is one of them. So they've been a wonderful, wonderful partner. They're very community oriented and have been great.
Thank you. Anyone
else with comments or questions on the April? All right. Then let's move on to a
financial. Fund balance policy.
Fund balance policy.
I'm going to let Jeff.
There have been some accounting changes that we follow in government. We follow Government Accounting Standards Board, or GASB, and every so often they put out new pronouncements that we're required to follow, whether we like to or not. And many of their pronouncements are useful, and this happens to be one where they believe, GASB, made up of professional accountants, believes that we should classify our fund balance differently than we have in the past. In the past, you used to seeing words like reserved. You have fund balance and you have a portion of that reserved for specific requirements. So they've come up with a new series of classifications that don't change the total of fund balance, but change descriptions and meanings and nuances within what fund balance is. So there are 5 categories here. And basically, some of these wouldn't really apply currently to the library, but really there's the ones I'll focus on are committed. I'm looking back at Cheryl, Assistant Vice Director, in case the I'll say something that needs some additional explanation. Committed, which would be something that the board chooses to commit fund balance for a specific purpose. And it doesn't have to be a specific dollar amount. It could be all the remaining balance with a fund balance could be committed for a certain purpose, such as in the past this board has committed funds to for cash flow purposes and unanticipated expenditures. That could be a purpose. But you don't have to commit anything. If you don't commit anything, then the next level of classification would be assigned. And under the proposed policy would be the library director, Teresa, who would assign fund balance to certain purposes if she so chose. And if not, it would be called unassigned on the balance sheet. So those are the primary categories, I believe, that would be involved. So the GASB requires, one, that the board, in this case, adopt a policy describing the different types of categories. And secondly, that if you choose to commit anything, that has to be done by June 30th for the year just ended. So if this board wanted to commit something for the year just ended, you would just ending on June 30th. You need to take a specific action to commit it. Now, usually you're used to thinking prospectively. You'd be thinking, okay, what do I need to commit for next year? Because you're looking at next year's budget. But the requirement here is that it's for the year that you're already in. And so the accountants tell us that if you commit something, it has to be done by June 30th so that your financial statements will be produced soon for June 30th would reflect a commitment. You can certainly make commitments anytime. You could do it July 1st, and that would be effective for the new year. So with that, there are some specifics on page 50. And this is working with Teresa. We've come up with language that basically where the board would commit fund balance in the general fund, general operating fund, for the purpose of establishing a stabilization arrangement to cover cash flow and unexpected expenditures in fiscal year 2012 and beyond, except as otherwise directed by the board. And the except is there because I believe in a different staff report in the budget process, Teresa is recommending, and consistent with some past input from the board, that $100,000 of this be used to balance next year's budget. And so but essentially this is saying whatever in the operating fund would be committed for the purposes of cash flow and unexpected expenditures, if that's the board's desire. And it also talks about here a couple of the funds that are in existence, different funds. The Technology Reserve Fund and the Felton Branch Reserve Fund would be, remain in place for commitments for those obvious purposes. But Teresa's suggesting, I believe, that in working with the Finance Committee, that the Contingency Reserve Fund and the Capital Project Reserve Fund be deleted. Do you have anything you want to add
right,
as to why?
And the reason for those is in my staff report. The contingency reserve fund has about 9,800 in it, and the operating fund already has the emergency and cash flow reserve fund built into it. So this fund's just been sitting there forever, and it just seems let's just get rid of it and throw the money into the operating budget where the rest of it is. And on the capital projects reserve fund, we have $472, so no one wants to get too excited about where to spend it. And as part of the service model development, there was a very definite decision made not to put money aside for capital reserve, for future capital reserves. There was a definite commitment to annual capital maintenance, and $40,000 this coming year, and I believe it goes up to $75,000 next year, for ongoing kinds of capital maintenance that we haven't been doing. But that in terms of capital projects themselves, we were not going to put money aside from that right now. That the focus right now is to try to build the emergency and cash reserve fund to about $1 million. And once that's done, then, and if we're going to do any big capital projects, it's probably going to take something more than we're going to be able to save with 472 as a start bond or whatever. So it just seems, why keep it there? And we can always create something if we need it, but $472 just didn't seem right. That's my recommendation.
Okay, so before we ask questions or clarifications, I would like to clarify, and so everybody does understand, because I believe I understand it correctly, that the staff report outlines two separate recommendations. One is to adopt the fund balance policy, which is required by GASB, and that's obviously included here in the staff report. The second is to authorize the fund balance going into the committed category. So I just want to say that's wrong.
For this year.
Any questions or comments from the board? Any public? I'm sorry.
Sorry, just a clarification on the date. So we need to do this by June 30th, and then for anything next year, we could do it at any point during the year.
Correct.
Right.
Sure.
I'll move the recommendation.
Second.
The first.
Page 045. Any public comment or input on this before we move on? No? All right, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes unanimously.
Okay.
Transition to service model.
I just wanted to give you an update on where we're at. The job descriptions and classification schedule has gone to the various bargaining units, and we're in the meet and confer stage on that. So that's being discussed with bargaining units right now. The next step that we're working on, I'm working on with HR, is the mapping and how do the new job descriptions fit with the old ones, which jobs may just move over to the old ones, which ones don't, and what happens and how we're going to handle that. So we've just started that process with HR. And so it's a pretty ambitious schedule, but we're trying to stick with it. So lots of meetings and discussions, and it's moving along. The new ILS, any questions on it? I just want to let you know you're not sitting around doing nothing. It's just a process that has to happen. The mapping is scheduled to be completed by the middle of August, which means all the meet and confer bargaining units. So we'll probably be getting something to them in probably about another month. New ILS. The date keeps changing, but it looks like we're planning. Our data is being worked on right now. They're supposed to. We've sent them our data. They're working on migrating it, and I think Jessica probably speaks to this better, and then see where things lie. And then the plan is to go live with the new system probably the weekend of September 23rd to 25th, but don't hold my feet to the fire on that one. What I did want to talk to the board about is the possibility, and I'll have time to bring a formal motion to you, but to consider the idea that we may want to close for the weekend that we do the migration. So we closed on Friday anyway, close that Saturday and Sunday, just because there's going to be a lot of chaos. Is the only word to describe when you migrate libraries and computer systems. And we wouldn't be able to be live anyway, because the very last thing that they take is your transaction data. What's checked out, what's on hold. So you have to take a point in time, and that's when they transfer the data over. So you can't continue transacting on the old system, because it's not going to go anywhere. It's going to fall into a black hole. So at a certain point, you're down to hand, and you want to minimize the amount of time you do that, because when you come up, you just got to get it all back in. So I'm going to come back to you. I want you to think about closing a lot of the libraries aren't open on Saturday and Sunday anyway. So the other possibility would be stay open but not allow anybody to check anything out. So if people needed access to computers or to the internet or to use library materials, but other libraries have limited people to checking out one item or three items, but it really can get messy. So I just want to put that out there for you. The other thing that I want you to be prepared about is we are not going to bring the VHS videos with us. We pay by the item when we migrate. We pay by the record. And there's about close to 6,000, pretty much close to 6,000 VHS still in the system. That What we'd like to do is, over the course of the next couple of months, withdraw those, find another place, another use for those shelves, and library branch managers have our July meeting, which is supposed to bring their plans for what they want to do with that space. And then we'd like to do a big sale, a friend sale in September, where we sell them very, very cheap if anybody wants them. And after that, we would donate them. Now, there are some that we will maintain. Those are some California history or local, just anything local or with some historical value. We will hang on to those with the hopes of transferring them to another medium, because video is going away and you're not going to be able to play it at some point. So we are sensitive to preserving historical information. But by and large, I mean, our videos, we haven't been able to buy them for close to 2 years, and they do stuff. People are using them, and I do hear about it. And, you know, Aptos pretty much doesn't have any. Scott Valley's not taking any to the new building. There's no, we didn't provide new shelving for it. And I do hear about it. There are people who do still have VHS players. But we'll also be willing to donate them to any facility or school or anybody who wants them, whatever's left. And so I wanted to let you know about that one.
Are these mostly movies? Popular
mostly
movies?
Yeah. They're not so popular anymore. And some older, people say they're classics that you can't get any other way, that nobody ever made them on DVD. We do try to rebuy them on DVD, but it's getting to be less and less. I mean, I asked Jessie to run a report, and the first report she gave me was 10,000, and then it was about 5,000 of those, or 4,000 of those were already withdrawn or lost or whatever. And then, so another report showed there's really only about 6,000 left. So, but this community has a hard time letting go of anything. So anyway, we'll do plenty of publicity on it. I just wanted to let you know what was coming. Saves us money, because to migrate these records and then to take them out of the system, you pay by the records. So, we're trying to clean up our patron database as well to try to have people haven't checked out. I don't remember what we finally. Richard, do you remember we finally decided on the checkout on people who didn't check out in how long?
3 years.
Yeah, people who haven't checked out in 3 years, we're not going to bring their records with us. And there could be somebody who's only using us on computer for 3 years and, has never checked out a book but still uses us, library cards or to get into some of the databases. And so we'll have a way for them to get a card, and we'll just have to reissue a card. We're hoping there's not too many of them. Unfortunately, we don't know how many there are like that. That's one of the faults of our system, is we don't have that data. But we don't think there's too many.
Is there a way to sort of publicize that?
Yeah. We will.
I'm going to start taking out the agents.
I'm going to take them out and don't bring them back. We don't care.
No library over new fees. All right.
Okay, so any comments on that?
Okay, moving on to AF.
Okay, the budget. Okay, a couple of you weren't at last month's meeting. The budget's been a challenge this year. As you can imagine, that didn't get started on it until about a month ago, just before last meeting, because everything was so up in the air. And there's still a lot of things we don't know based on the new staffing model. So we did a budget that was half a year. Half the year was based on the current structure and everything as is continuing, and the second half of the year on our best guess towards where the new staffing model was going. So that's pretty much what I presented at the May meeting, and we identified, I think, three areas for further review. One was utilities, to make sure they were adjusted properly for additional hours starting in January. We were waiting for some final benefit numbers from the city, and we wanted to be able to adjust the personnel budget with some more definitive figures for the new staffing plan if available. And part of that is available. The new classifications, what we're going to pay the new classifications, is available. What is still not being worked on is how many in each and where do individuals end up. Because some people, all the calculations have been done at top step. Everybody will not end up at top step of the new classification. Some might, some probably won't. So until we know by individual where they end up, we really don't know the full impact of the budget. So we're trying to estimate high. So when it comes to revenues, even what you have here does not reflect what was just distributed to the Library Financing Authority, because that came after I had already prepared this. So this actual revenues actually, I think, go up about another $20,000. based on the information we just got tonight. I did take out what I estimated was about $15,000 loss to Watsonville because of the population shift. I think it only showed as 11 on the document we got, so it's not quite as much as I thought. So, the budget I prepared, so there's a lot of little things there that are still in play. It looks like what we got today from the Library Financing Authority is that the sales tax estimate is $20,000 higher. So those two end up balancing, the 20 and the 50. And actually their estimate on maintenance of effort is $4,000 less than the figures I had when I was working with it. So take it together, 15, 14, 19, balance with 20. No. I also added in those two contingency fund and the capital projects fund into revenues, and I also adjusted for three grants that were received this year that were not included in the original budget, and they're only going to be partially expended this year. One is the County Office of Education grant, which the money is supposed to come any day now. We don't actually even have it yet, and that's $12,500, of which I think $7,500 is going to get paid this year, and then the rest next fiscal year. The new ILS, we got a grant from the IMLS, Museum and Library Services, $32,000, and the staff transition training, which you've known about, $38,000. So I made sure those got reflected in the 10-11 budget because I need to carry them into 11-12. So on expenditures, personnel, when we did the original estimates, benefits were about 49% of salaries. When we do personnel, the city gives it to us by individual. They actually know the cost per individual. So we can only do that for the first half of the year. For the second half of the year, we had to just go with what's the percentage that's spent on benefits. And so we had used 49%. It turns out it's going to be closer to 47.5%. Unfortunately, during the service model development, we worked with a number of 43%. So it is higher than we anticipated. I also found a discrepancy in calculating part-time staff in the first half of the year, so we had to fix that. The analysis of the job descriptions resulted in about $105,000 more, which I think is pretty good on a $8 million estimate there. So, but it still did
and
come
that's
in.
That's a conservative estimate because you're figuring everybody at the top of the
that's
step.
That's figuring everybody at the top step, so it probably won't be that much. But and then 47.5% for benefits. So another $50,000, but it's only half the year. So that's where the $78,000 figure comes in. I talked with HR and in terms of what they're working on, and they suggest I revise the salary savings based on what they think is going to happen. Possibility of employing AmeriCorps volunteer. Actually, we heard today we got the grant for the AmeriCorps volunteer through the volunteer center. Now we just have to have somebody who wants to work with us. But
I hope you're not talking about putting that person in charge of the volunteers, are you? You're talking about that person working under someone.
That person will work under the, for now we're bringing a transition coordinator on board. One of the staff members is going to get elevated to transition coordinator. They will work under that person to get the volunteer program established. Then once I can hire a volunteer coordinator for the library, which is the position, they'll work under them. So they're going to get the program going.
That concerns me a little bit about whether the AmeriCorps volunteer will have the skills necessary to set up the volunteer program, and I think probably not.
I just got the MOU today, and the volunteer center they're working very closely with us, and they actually provide training and ongoing training for the person and helps them.
Yeah, this is a huge deal, though.
Well. Other than that, I have no one for the first half of the year. I won't have anybody till December at the earliest. So it's.
Well, I guess.
What are you worried about the downside there?
I'm worried that we'll put this in the hands of somebody who really isn't able to do it. And it's so important. This is going to be so important. I don't think we've ever talked about having this done by an AmeriCorps volunteer in the past. So if I don't have a solution, I don't know what the solution is exactly, but AmeriCorps volunteers are great, and but there's some variety, and they basically are generally recent college graduates. and real smart, but not necessarily experienced in anything.
Well, we're getting a lot of support from the volunteer center.
Well, that would help. I guess I'll, if it's okay, I'll talk to the volunteer center and get a sense of how they see this working. But it makes me a little nervous because the volunteer component is really important.
Well, then
I am reluctant to put it in the hands of an inexperienced person.
The alternative we had until this was that the person in charge of coordinating the transition was going to need to start setting up the volunteer program themselves while doing all the other things that we're expecting them to do. So this way they'll be supervising the AmeriCorps volunteer, and then in October, when you all approve the final employment, you know, final classification schedule, the whole thing, then we can actually hire the volunteer coordinator for the library, and then they can supervise. They can then take over from the transition coordinator and supervise the AmeriCorps volunteers.
Does this budget include? So does this include a new assistant director for the library? Does this budget?
There's not an assistant director.
There's no assistant director because we had talked about putting that in.
No, you'd ask to take it out.
Well, but I thought that where we had ended up was that there was enough money to include that.
There is a division manager who's slightly elevated over the other division managers, manager of system services and support.
And this is a new position?
No, well, it's a division manager. We had four division managers now, and it's changing things. It's taking one of the division managers and just elevating them slightly to handle some more things. So it's not an assistant director per se, no.
Because I was thinking if there was a new assistant director, we could put this volunteer component under them.
The volunteer component does come under the manager of system services and support. If it is possible to carve out a piece from the total package and have you approve that earlier than October. But until then, I can't do anything under the new structure until the whole classification system is approved. All the new job descriptions and the whole staffing plan that we're going to, with all the new job description classification, I can't hire any of those positions until it's been approved by the library board and the city council. And that is scheduled for October. We're bringing the whole package. So in the meantime, I have to work with all the special projects, coordinator, that kind of thing.
Would we want to fast track this position, approval of this position, so you don't have to depend on a volunteer?
Jim, can we?
I'm sorry, forgive me.
Wait until Ellen's done and then
Okay, one other thing. In the summary, there's a chart that has draft budget, final proposed budget, mm-hmm. and changes. And above that, you talk about there's a net gain of approximately $269,000.
That's from 10-11. Can we? I haven't finished going through it yet. You stop me on the volunteer coordinator, the AmeriCorps volunteer, but
questions or clarifications the AmeriCorps volunteer, let's take those now since we've already started those, and then let's Teresa finish her staff report, and then we'll take questions on the rest. So, Leah, you're next.
Okay. So, Ellen, I hear your concerns about the volunteer. I'm a little confused on the name, but the AmeriCorps person who would be doing this. And I guess I'm just wondering if you could outline a little bit the scope of what they would be doing as opposed to the person who would be supervising. I mean, in my understanding, the person who would be supervising them would be making decisions and outlining the scope of the work, and then that person would be implementing it, checking in with the supervisor. Is that sort of how you see that?
They're going to be, that's basically it. Now, right now we have the volunteer center, the Laurel, I don't remember your last name, at the volunteer center, is down as the supervisor of our volunteer coordinator because we don't have anybody assigned to it, to that position.
But we will.
But we will, eventually. But if we need to,
right?
We can use Laura.
No,
well, we use the transition coordinator.
Transition coordinator, right, yeah.
But we've got a lot of support from the volunteer center, so this person is going to be asked to set up things like the software that manages the volunteers that, you know, we need to get set up. The start making sure that in the first few months, making sure we have all the right processes in place for bringing on volunteers, and you know, how do we recruit them, and what kind of screening do we put them through, how do we interview them, how do we place them, all that kind of information. And then they would step into, with my supposition, then they would step into the role of implementing and trying to find volunteers. So the first few months are really going to be spent in getting up to speed on how do you set up a volunteer program. And I really see, I mean, we don't have anyone trained to do that at all. So having somebody who's getting trained by the volunteer center, to me, 15% of their time is supposed to be spent in training. So I see that as a way for us to build capacity through this individual to move us along until we can actually take it over ourselves, and then they'll be working very closely with whoever takes it over.
Nancy?
Well, I have some concerns too, sort of echoing what Ellen said. I guess my assumption was that we already have a really good idea of how this program's going to be run, and that we're maybe looking at other systems who have really vibrant volunteer library systems and have vibrant volunteer programs. And I guess my concern about the volunteer center is, do they know what the need, do they know how to run a big public library volunteer program? I mean, it seems like we might want to look at a neighboring system who already has one up and going and sort of...
Well, there's nothing to stop us from having the American volunteer do that.
Having
right
them
now,
shadow.
I don't have anybody to do that either.
Well, no, I'm just saying that my concern is that the volunteer center, I mean, they do great stuff within their realm, but I don't think they know how a library
But they
operates.
Don't have volunteers. I mean, volunteers are very similar, and I don't see any reason why the AmeriCorps volunteer can't look at other libraries as well to see what makes them different from, say, what you know, the volunteer center may be doing. Many of the basic principles of volunteer coordination cross organizations, and so I think we can do both of those things without, I think we can get value from the volunteer center and from looking, and we can ask that the AmeriCorps volunteer, some of what they do, maybe research into what other libraries are doing and how they do it.
I think
and,
that would be great.
And it's absolutely no problem with having them
and
do that.
Shadow some other, a couple
that,
other systems.
That would be fine. And best practices from elsewhere, absolutely.
Yeah.
But we it's somebody to do it. Otherwise, I don't have anyone to do that until late fall. And that's getting awfully close if we're trying to implement in January. And it takes some of the pressure off the transition coordinator, who's going to have to try to get up to speed on that, even though that's not really their, I mean, that's only one piece of what they're going to need to be working on. So I think it just adds to our capacity and our time.
Any more questions?
I agree with Ellen. This is a critically important position, but I'm hearing you say that you can't move any faster than this just because of the nature of what we've got to go through to get the position approved. Is there anything the board can do just to speed up this one position?
No.
So there's no action that we could take that would enable you to hire, to open this position up and put this on a fast track ahead of everything else.
Because I don't have the whole rest of it in place, the whole rest of the system in place that they fit into. I mean, it would be just hiring an outlier.
Could you start the process of figuring out who that person is now? In other words, do that. And we don't know, to your point, we don't know things about the model, how the rest of the system looks. Can we take that time where the volunteer person couldn't do that coordination, can we take that time to hire to figure out who the person is? So by the time we do have the data so that person can put together a good volunteer organization, we've already got that person in place. In other words, do we have to wait? Couldn't the two move forward in parallel? You see what I'm saying? And if we can't, but I guess just a point to consider, maybe review with the city's HR people and see if there's any
I can talk to HR, but it's, you know, we're really trying hard not to carve out individual pieces because it makes it really hard when we're dealing with the bargaining units. And plus, it's harder on the staff, too, to know if people, you know, where we're going to place people, what people are interested in, to be at in a vacuum to do it. But I can look at it.
Thank you.
Catherine. Actually, that's the direction I kind of want to go in. We're in charge of the budget. If we wanted to, we could allocate effective July 1st, go hire a volunteer for him. I mean, they're all stand.
No, I can't because it's got to be through city HR.
Well, no, I know that. I mean, through HR, through all your hires. You do all your hires through them. This is just, say, effective July 1st, we've got this money in the budget. Work with HR. What stumbled me on this one is we don't have a job description in front of them. And to me, the process to set up, it's the processes that go ahead of time. I've worked with a wonderful volunteer coordinator at the Homeless Service Center, which was AmeriCorps person. I mean, he was wonderful. And he set up processes, he figured out the application. And but we I know the director was, you know, report to the director. So I think this was a tiny organization. But I think it's critical that we know the assignment of that VISTA person. But I don't see why, because it's such a standalone position. You know, they're not a librarian doing a lot of stuff to, I'm familiar with all the library workers going
to
be doing.
If you want to approve the volunteer coordinator,
yeah,
library specialist, volunteer, well, you have to be approving library specialist as a classification because it's not just a volunteer coordinator.
That's a working title.
If you want to approve the library specialist at the July board meeting, does City Council meet in July or do they meet in July? You don't meet in August.
Yeah.
And you don't meet in July. Okay. So I thought I'd get confused. Okay. I can probably get HR to bring you volunteer coordinator, the library specialist classification to the July board meeting. And then it would go to City Council at your next meeting in July, and that the library specialist position could be.
Now we already know it's going to be classified specialist.
It's a library specialist position. We know
because we've written the job description.
We've written the job description. Okay. We've classified it in terms of where it gets paid, and it's in with all the others that we're in meet and confer over. So we would need to make sure that I've got a meet and confer on Thursday with the bargaining unit that they don't have a problem with that particular. They'd have to sign off on that one. So that we can then have can bring it to you in July.
What bargaining unit?
I don't remember which one it falls into.
But it's a high level position.
Yes. I just don't remember which unit it's in.
So that would just give us a real leg up. Get the most important thing to get going. And I really see it. You know, I'm not telling you how to run circulation or any of these departments. Mm-hmm. In some ways, they've all had some experience with volunteers, but this is all crucial. Carve outs. We'd be paying them. Well, by the time we get a fill, it'd be a few months.
Well, right? We'd be pulling from somebody already on staff. We first have to see if we have somebody on staff who qualifies. That's the way it's going to have to go.
Because.
I
mean, I didn't know we had to.
The other part of this is that the mapping and where how we're going to fill these positions hasn't been finalized yet and has to go through meet and confer as well with the bargaining units. And so we can't just create this position and say we're going to open it up to.
But you already said there's nobody on staff who has that.
I said I don't know. I don't know if there's anyone, but I can't put anybody in it until the position exists, and it doesn't exist yet.
Job description exists.
The job description
exists.
But the
allocation doesn't exist.
Not the allocation. The job description exists in theory. It has not been approved by you. It has not been approved by City Council. The other piece of it is, even though once we get the positions themselves approved, how we transition staff from the existing positions to the new positions, that has not even entered the meet and confer yet. And we would have to carve that out and go through an entire meet and confer with the unions on that. And so that's the piece I'm not sure can happen as well. I can talk to HR tomorrow, but
So perhaps you can bring back in the July meeting
you could
options on how we might move more quickly, and what we've just discussed is certainly an option, and the impact or ability to do that, so that we can understand, because I understand it's really complicated. It's like a house of cards. When you pull one card out,
right,
and you know, yeah, everything else collapses.
But she couldn't do.
So it's
pretty much it, though.
I know. It is, and so it's
instead of dominoes.
So if you could bring back more information based on what we said here and what it would take if we want to move ahead more quickly as a board, what would we need to do, and what is the impact of that?
Questions. If you decided to go ahead with the AmeriCorps volunteer visit, when would that person
end of August
start?
End of August.
So there's really only 1 month between when we would hire a volunteer, when the AmeriCorps person would come on, and we would hire when would our volunteer coordinator come on?
If we went with the regular process, you all would approve mm-hmm. these positions in October.
Okay.
We would approve the whole plan in October.
Okay.
I think it's October 4th, if I'm not mistaken. I have my calendar in front of me, and I think City Council meets the following week. So by October 15th, we can start hiring.
Oh, well, but
and
it's
really,
already,
you can't have anybody,
like,
you know.
But it really would be December, probably. That's when you could start advertising, right?
Well, we don't know the process yet. We're going to try to fill positions in-house as much as we possibly
can.
Right,
and that's great.
And we can start that October, as soon as I look over here, because it's City Council, October 15th. And since it's in-house, we can probably do it, assuming someone's qualified. We have somebody qualified. We should have somebody on by, I would say, mid-November at the latest. It's one of the first positions I know needs to be hired. I mean, I already know that. So by November. So you'd have the AmeriCorps person working October, August, September, then October, not quite 3 months, just working under the transition coordinator. So it's not a huge amount of time in terms of, you know,
right,
getting certain things established.
But I guess I think it'd be wonderful if there's somebody on staff who could do this, but I think probably not. So probably you're going to have to advertise. I mean, we really want, you know, a person who has done this, has experience, who knows how to set these up and how to manage them. So it's probably December would be my guess. Go by how long it takes the county, it's maybe April. But assuming that the city can move a little more quickly, it's gonna be a long time.
In terms of the city, it goes on the consent agenda the minute it's done, so that.
Right.
No, I mean just in terms of the process of advertising and interviewing and
right.
hiring.
Right. Oh, right, right.
All that kind of stuff.
Well, that's why I really want to propose we start in July.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But we
can't.
I agree.
I mean,
you're going to bring it back to us in July. What it would take and what the impact is.
So I guess that's why we wanted to say we can't.
Yeah.
We really got to find out all the nooks and crannies and what the issue is.
I can do that. I will do
yes.
what I can. And I may be able to bring a piece of it back to you to get us a step closer. But we'll see what's possible.
John?
I don't really offer an opinion about when this person should be hired. If your plan doesn't sound to be, it sounds to be a reasonable one. An AmeriCorps volunteer could do a lot of the research piece that would be helpful for this. I've worked with a lot of organizations that use volunteers. When I was at the AIDS Project, we had 600 volunteers. And the person who organized it, it's a personality trait about whether you're going to be able to work with volunteers and inspire them and organize them and have a follow-through. And you have to have a certain level of organization. And someone may have done that before, and someone may not have done it before. The person who ran the volunteer program at the AIDS Project when I was there had been a bookkeeper before, but she had the right, serve to be able to do it, and she was able to connect with people. And at the end of the day, that inspiration was very, very helpful. So it's a very important position, and it rises and falls.
Okay, we have a member of the public who would really like to talk on this topic. I'm assuming volunteer.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Are you going to use Ron D'Alessandro, who is the Friends volunteer coordinator?
No, the Friends are going to continue using Ron for their own, for the Friends volunteer, but the library is taking on its own volunteer coordinator.
You may, I believe you're a good resource person. Yeah. Very good.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, back to
move on to utilities.
We looked at utilities. We didn't need to make any changes. Carryovers. There's three funds that need carryover from this year. One is the funding for the new ILS. We have spent approximately $65,000 this year. We actually have $207,000 if you include the $32,000 grant in money. So we are reserving would like to carry over $142,000 that will be expended by the end of September, early October. You remember the grant we got from the state, which was federal money for staff training for the transition. That was $38,000. Apparently, we've only spent $11,000 and plan to spend another $27,000 next year. And our Santa Cruz County Office of Education grant, I've mentioned that one before. We're just getting it now. It just happened really fast in the last couple of weeks. So the new budget that I presented to you does show a deficit of about $81,000 for fiscal year 11-12, which is, if you look at it, is very close to the differential caused by the new classification system and is really only 1% of the total budget. I really think that we can manage to that. It's actually gotten, I think, $20,000 better with the news from the county. And then we'll know the true personnel costs for the new services and staffing models by November and December when we get everybody placed in new positions. My conservative estimate for 10-11, and I actually think it's going to be higher than this, we will end with a net gain of about $269,000 after the carryovers. I didn't count those. I carried those over, and then we still have $269,000. So I am asking, and it's what we talked about in finance, that we allocate the first $100,000 to cover the possible deficit. And I should have put Sam's wording in from his motion, and I neglected to do that. If we don't need it, it would revert back to the reserve fund. I know it's not really called the reserve fund anymore, but old habits die, by heart. And we agreed, actually, in the development of the service model, we agreed that we weren't going to make any direct contributions to the emergency cash reserve fund in 11-12, but we were going to start those payments next year. So this actually, you know, gets us ahead a little bit, but is not something that we counted on doing. So I think that giving us a little bit more cushion for the transition is wise, just because there's still too many unknowns out there. So what this chart does, it's the draft budget, has nothing to do with the 10-11 budget. It was just, I wanted you to see the numbers I gave you back in May and how they've changed in the final budget. So it's just the 11-12 money, nothing to do with the 10-11 carryover fund balance being carried or anything like that. It's simply next year we're looking at $11,047,000 in revenues and $11,129,728 in expenditures, so we're $82,000 short, which the budget I presented to you in May had us $33,000 to the positive, and so what you're looking at now is about $115,000 difference than what you looked at in May. But it's, I just thought you wanted to see what looked like. Now I'm done.
Helen. So this chart that's on 53, this is draft budget for 11-12.
Right.
And where you're showing an $82,000 deficit in the final proposed budget, mm-hmm. but you're suggesting that we put $100,000 in there, mm-hmm. with a $269,000 carryover, mm-hmm. so there would actually be an $18,000, $17,000.
Yeah, look at the long sheet.
17,747.
Okay, great. Okay. Maybe you had a question. I just had a clarifying thing about the new fund balance policy that we just passed. So if we put that $169,000 in the
committed for the, it's not really emergency cash reserves, it would be the operating fund, right? So we could draw it back out if we needed to cover more transition costs for the staff.
We're basically saying we would add it mentally, I guess, to the 495 that we put aside last year. That is accessible to us if we need it.
Because committed just makes it sound like for that we would be able to.
Just one comment I did make before is that in order to use that money, once the board commits it, then it does take future board action, as you know. So if the board commits an amount, it can't be used until go back to the board and get the board's authorization.
Okay. Any other questions from the board? Clarifying questions? Any public input on our proposed budget? No? Okay, back to the board.
I'd move approval of the staff recommendation with the addition to return at the July meeting with the proposal to expedite the hiring of a permanent, the hiring, excuse me, of a permanent volunteer coordinator. Second.
With that, do we need to adjust any line figures because the person may stop earlier or not? Just worry about later.
It depends who gets it. If somebody on staff gets the position, then the difference between what they're making now and what this position pays is probably de minimis. I mean, I'm just guessing. It kind of depends.
Well, it falls in that $17,000.
But if you're hiring it in addition to existing staff, then you're talking half a year salary for that person. So,
And you'll bring that information as to the potential impact.
Yes, the potential impact, because I won't know who's getting it.
Okay.
May I ask, did you want to add the, once the savings are realized, that the money will go back, since it wasn't in the recommendation? That was part of the discussion, that once...
We don't need the $100,000?
Should the money not be needed, that it will go back in the cash reserve?
Sure, did you want
that? That was from the Finance Committee. Yeah. That's how they got me to agree to it.
Oh, okay. And I'm sorry. I realized it this morning, Sam.
Yes,
I forgot
that's
to
part
put
of
it in
the
there.
Motion.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, definitely.
Thank you.
Included
in the motion.
And you can look at the wording on the Finance Committee.
Yeah. If there's one of the exact wording.
Any other comments or questions? All right, with that, we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes unanimously. Okay, thanks, Jack. I would like to say, before we move off the budget question, I really commend Teresa and the staff in getting this together. I think, Carrie, you were probably closely involved. Yeah. As I know, it is just a really hard thing to do, given all the transitions that are happening, all the things you have to juggle, so I appreciate that. I found the format really clear and understandable. All right, moving on to other business, parking lot review.
Nothing remarkable.
Any comments otherwise? We will be adjourning to our next regularly scheduled meeting on Monday, July 11th. Thank you.